and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. It is a pleasure to be with you. I hope you're just as happy to be with me. The phone number, if you'd like to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. A programming note, if you will. On Thursday, so my flagship station, the station where I got my start in radio is WSB Radio in Atlanta, the nation's most listened to news talk station. How they ever hired a guy like me with a voice like mine, I will never know, but they did. And the ratings have been pretty good, so they've stuck with me. And they put me into Rush's slot a couple of months ago. But every year, that station does a carathon, a 24-plus hour nonstop fundraiser for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, which you would think with the name it just focuses on kids in Atlanta, but actually it covers the entire nation, particularly in the Southeast, where all of my affiliates are. Regardless of where you are in or outside the state of Georgia, there are kids in your community that have been helped by Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So every year, WSB Radio fundraises for them. It is a very WSB event. And so I made the call on Thursday. I was going to do the whole carathon on here and decided it would be better this year to just let me do the carathon on WSB, and I will have Alan Sanders filling in for me on Thursday. There will be ability for you to participate. However, I will explain that to you with some recorded audio on Thursday. And then on Friday, I will spend an hour explicitly talking about this, and I want to get you all ready for it. And here's why. So many people rely on the government. So many people expect the government to do things. And there are a lot of things that government does. And in fact, you have seen a decline in charitable resources over the years in direct relation to the rise of government resources. So there are fewer charitable food banks these days and more that exist directly through government subsidy. There are way more government programs to help the poor now and fewer private programs to help the poor. Sometimes for the better, oftentimes for the worse. And all the time, conservatives in particular say, we got to step up, we got to do more. The data shows that conservatives are more charitable than progressives. And by the way, that's not in dispute. It really isn't in dispute. I'm not trying to make a partisan point here. That's just what the data shows. People who identify as conservative tend to be more charitable than people who identify as progressive. People who identify as regular churchgoers tend to be the most charitable people. Why? Well, because the good Lord says you gotta tithe, and so they tithe, and then they give extra, and they see how it's not a prosperity gospel, but God really does. He is more generous to those who have a generous heart. If you can do much with little, he will give you much more to do with more. And so Christians tend to be the most charitable people on the planet. So I tell people every year, we do this. Some people get a little frustrated. Why aren't you talking about this or that? Why are you pausing? Because it's important. Because fighting cancer is important. Fighting childhood cancer is important. And we will do that at the end of this week on WSB, my flagship station. I will spend an hour on this program on Friday talking about it. I hope you may consider over the next few days, meditate on, can you give? Will you give? Will you help? Wherever you are listening to me right now on the radio, there is someone in your neighborhood who has a child who has been helped directly or indirectly by this Children's Healthcare of Atlanta program and the Aflac Children's Cancer Center. And so I want you to think about, can you help later this week when the call comes out and the carathon goes live? Are you able to do something? Because it really is important. And we will spend some time talking about it later. But I want to get you prepared for it. I want to get it on your mind. I want you to think before you go through the line at Starbucks today, or to Chick-fil-A, hey, can I not buy this sandwich or this cup of coffee today and instead give it to actually fight childhood cancer later this week? There are a lot of things that this that the Aflac Children's Cancer Center cannot do but for direct donations from individuals. Like, for example, I toured the facility a while back. with Jimmy Ellis from Jim Ellis Car Dealership in North Atlanta. A lot of y'all are probably familiar with him. In fact, I got to go pick up a new car from him later this week. But he was on the tour with me. And what was the most amazing thing about this facility is that you could have these almost small, they were large rooms where parents could stay in the room with the child going through chemo. And the hospital could open the door from the outside, like a closet, and put food in or take dirty clothes out, help the family with laundry and supplies and stuff, close it up, never have to go in the room and wake the kid, wake the parents. But they couldn't do that with government money. It had to be private donations. And that's what people who participate in the Carathon fundraise for. So keep that in mind. I don't want to dwell on it here now. There'll be plenty of time later. Just start thinking when you're in line at Starbucks or fast food or going to a restaurant today, can I save this money up today and on Thursday and Friday this week, donate it to help a child who's fighting cancer. Now, I really need to start the show here, and I wasn't going to, but I decided I was going to start at this particular moment. In 2009, I will be very honest. I did not appreciate my role in the conservative movement. I thought it was just me and friends hanging out online having fun. Twitter had started a couple of years before. And in 2009, when David Souter stepped down from the Supreme Court, a friend of mine said something I thought was funny in an email. He was wise enough not to put it on Twitter. I was stupid enough to do so. The Supreme Court just lost its only goat effing child molester. That's what I tweeted, except I didn't use F. I wrote out the word with the ing on the end. Not my finest moment, probably the dumbest thing I've ever done. Maybe not the dumbest, but it was right up there in the pantheon of stupid things Eric has done. It was also actually, I'm not glad I did it. It was a shameful thing to do, but I'm glad that I did it then. Because I would have done something more stupid later. And it made me appreciate at that moment that people actually, it wasn't just me and my friends, people actually did listen to what I had to say. And people took me seriously on things. And it was a discredit to myself. And how would people take me seriously when I was saying idiotic things like that? Now, there are plenty of things I say that people get mad at. People don't treat seriously. Oftentimes things I genuinely believe, but not flippant, awful things like that. It was also an eye-opening experience because it had a direct impact on my family. My wife was in tears one day in our kitchen. She was so upset, and I went in and had no idea why, and it was because I had said that, and she was confronted by someone at a store, wanted to know why her husband would say such a thing. I was on city council in Macon, Georgia at the time. And it was the eye-opening moment to make me realize that what I did for a living actually did impact other people, including my family. And, you know, I have always been a rabid partisan. I've always been a rabid Republican. I was an elected Republican. I campaigned for Republicans. I was a campaign manager for Republicans. And for the longest time, people thought I was just too partisan. So how the hell am I the guy who got to the point of saying, wait a second, you guys have lost your minds? If anything, I think you ask people who are involved in politics at that moment on the left or the right, and they'd say, I would be the guy storming into the U.S. Capitol. So many people were surprised in 2016 when I said, you know what, I'm a Christian. I believe character counts. I'm not voting for either the Republican or the Democratic nominee. I don't like either of their character. And there were so many people who were just shocked that I, of all people, the guy who said that about David Souter would be in this position come 2016. And I'm shocked. I mean, how am I the guy who looks at this stuff and says, y'all are out of your freaking minds? I know what it's like to be a crazy partisan, and y'all have like kicked it up so many notches that you've gone off the deep end of insanity. And I say that in relation to the hearings on Capitol Hill today, and I want to say a few things about those. The January 6th Commission has convened, and I actually am appalled at the number of Republicans who have decided it really was no big deal. And they're trying to claim that these people in jail for trespassing into the U.S. Capitol are somehow political prisoners. That is appalling, because political prisoners, actually, it means something it really does mean something around the world. There are a lot of people who have spoken out against dictatorial regimes, and they are in prison just for speaking out. They didn't kick the doors in the U.S. Capitol and storm inside. It was not an insurrection, but it was an incursion into the U.S. Capitol. The revisionist history on Ashley Babbitt, the lady who was shot and killed, has been appalling. They're trying to make her a martyr when, in fact, she was with a gang of, some of them faces covered, trying to kick in the doors into the speaker's lobby. You can see on the security footage, there are literally members of Congress running for their lives, getting away from them as they try to kick in the door. They smash in the window and she tries to crawl through to open the door so the mob can get inside, and she's shot and killed. She may have died thinking she was a hero trying to save democracy. In fact, she was on the side of the bad guys. And we shouldn't gussy it up and claim she's some sort of martyr. She was a criminal. At the same time, we should also not make more of it than it is. A lot of people went in there just to see what was going on. There were bad people, some of whom erected a gallows and a noose and wanted to hang Mike Pence. That's not in dispute. The revisionist history from some of these people is appalling. Pretending stuff like that didn't happen, you couldn't believe your own eyes. The people who say Blue Lives Matter apparently have a caveat that, well, unless they work on Capitol Hill and we're defending members of Congress, then their lives don't count. We can't believe a word they say. But there were a lot of people who just thought, the crowd went in. Let's go see what's going on. And they were neither malicious nor had ill intent. There were a lot of people in Washington who never went into the Capitol that day. They were just there to protest the election, blow off steam, disappointed in the outcome. Some of them convinced to this day the election was stolen. We're still getting emails every day and phone calls from people who are convinced that the election fraud has actually been exposed in Arizona and Georgia when it hasn't. They're just continuing to believe the lies down the rabbit hole. At the same time, it is very, very clear to me that Democrats in Washington, D.C., and in the media, are intent on making way more of January 6th than there was. They want to compare it to September 11th. I'm sorry, do you know in 1983, communists tried to blow up the Capitol? They actually set a bomb, and it blew up in the Capitol. No bombs went off in the Capitol. In fact, two pipe bombs were planted. We don't know who did it. At the RNC and the DNC, they never went off, thank God. But communists in 1983 actually tried to do this. Puerto Rican nationalists shot up the House Gallery. Let's revise history and claim that these people storming into the Capitol. It was bad. It was bad. In the top 10 bad things that have happened as far as civil actions go in the United States Congress, in the U.S. Capitol, it was right up there. But it wasn't communists blowing up the building, which happened in 1983. It wasn't Puerto Rican nationalists trying to gun down members of Congress from the House Gallery. That happened. It wasn't a lot of really bad things. It was not September 11th. And those who say it was should not be taken any more seriously than those who say it was nothing. The Democrats want to draw blood from the GOP over this. They want to score points. And to some degree, to a great degree, the media is helping them. Because the Democrats and media living in the same bubble have told each other, and so they both believe, that the outcome, what is happening, is going to hurt the GOP next November. That as long as people will be reminded of what happened on January 6th, the Republican Party will be toast. This has nothing to do with the truth of the matter asserted. This really doesn't have anything to do with trying to figure out what happened and why and where the failures were. This has to do with building up a narrative for the media to use to bludgeon Republicans next year to help Democrats. Yeah, we should probably figure out what happened, but I don't know that we needed a public grandstanding committee with a bunch of speeches to do that. What happened wasn't good, and we shouldn't revise it down into making it nothing and calling these people political prisoners when there were a bunch of trespassers. We shouldn't revise it up to make it 9/11 and the worst affront to democracy in American history. It wasn't, and if you believe that, you are not a serious person, any more serious than the people who say it was nothing. But it was something. We should take note of what it was. We should understand a lot of people were whipped into a frenzy by a pile of lies. Some people to this day are convinced the election was stolen and will never, ever be convinced otherwise, no matter what you say. But we should also understand that what really is happening on Capitol Hill right now is a concerted effort by the media and the Democrats to try to define the entirety of the Republican Party by the events of January 6th and the people who were there, ignoring the fact that there were 75 plus million Americans who voted for Donald Trump, and less than 10,000 of them were in Washington, less than 200 or 300 of them headed over to the Capitol. You should not define all of Donald Trump's supporters by that mob. If we are to do that, then we need to define the entire Democratic Party by the Black Lives Matter mob that's been burning the streets of America. And we should note the double standard of the media and the Democrats who wanted to give them a pass while doing everything they can to destroy any Trump supporter who dared show up in Washington on January 6th. We should note the double standards. We should note the hypocrisy. We shouldn't dismiss either of them, but we should also be mindful that the spectacle we're going to get in Washington this week really doesn't have anything to do with finding the truth of what happened on January 6th and everything to do with trying to hurt the GOP in the run-up to the midterm elections. That also doesn't mean, however, that we on our side should dispense with the truth of what happened and what our eyes actually saw, because something really did happen and we shouldn't pretend it all away. Do you know why you get free mail services out there? Because, I mean, you're actually the what's being sold to advertisers, among other things, and it's just not smart right now. With so many hackers, so much sensitive information out there, you need a great email service that keeps everything private and you're not up for sale, you're not getting ads in return. Start Mail keeps everything encrypted. Everything is great. And when you delete it, your email from Start Mail, it's gone forever. Now, you can feel safe with Start Mail because it's backed by the world's most robust privacy laws, and Start Mail uses their own servers, not Amazon's, which means that they can't be put out of the business like Parler was put out of business. You get unlimited anonymous alias addresses. So let's say you need to provide an email to a company, but you want to protect your identity. You don't want to start getting spam from them. Start Mail can generate a shareable alias email for you, and it can be deleted at any time. Now, here's what you got to do. You go to start securing your email privacy with Start Mail by signing up today, and you get 50% off your first year. You go to startmail.com/Eric. That's Start Mail with a T, startmail.com/Eric, for 50% off your first year. startmail.com/Eric. Keep your mail confidential. Keep your email private. Avoid the scams and the hackers with Start Mail. I occasionally am surprised. I'm surprised, and I'm going to spend more time on a topic that I didn't spend a lot of time with because I'm actually really surprised. Yesterday, in passing, at the very end of the show, I mentioned a story from National Review by C. Jarrett Dieterle, and I've gotten more emails on this topic than anything in the last couple of weeks. The topic, of course, won't surprise you as to why. Bourbon by mail. So there are a hodgepodge of laws in the country because the Constitution reserves to the states the power to regulate alcohol. Every state has their own laws. And in having their own laws, it makes no sense state by state. So, for example, there's a website I have long used called Caskers to order hard-to-find bourbons and have them sent to my house. But now in Georgia, you can have a margarita delivered to your door or a case of beer delivered to your door, but you're no longer allowed to have whiskey delivered to your door. And actually, the problem really isn't the state per se, but the FedEx and UPS now take a very tough line claiming that they're going to be liable if something happens because of the hodgepodge of state laws. And some states they'll ship to, and in Georgia now they won't. So for years, I've been able to go to caskers.com and say, hey, I there's this rare bourbon I've been looking for. I can't find it in Georgia. They've got it. Ship it to me. And they would. Not anymore. Georgia's got to do something. But we need some uniformity in states, I think. We got to do something with the uniformity in the states and the stuff, because it's very, you can ship wine to pretty much any state now, but bourbon you can't. And I hate wine. It's the one thing Jesus got wrong in the Bible. He should have turned the water into bourbon, because I hate grapes, and grapes are gross. And now I got to go to communion once a month and take the grape juice, and I spend the entire church service getting sweaty. I hate grapes so much, y'all. I despise grapes. Regarding recipes. Just regarding recipes, one moment. Let me just say, this week, I'm sending you a recipe that doesn't sound good. Off the top of it, just superficially, it doesn't sound good. It's just a ham sandwich. Just a ham sandwich. That it's the best ham sandwich you'll ever eat, because it's way more than a ham sandwich. It is a perfect appetizer for a party. In fact, I'll put it to you this way. Philip came over on Sunday. I made some of these when we were sitting on the front porch having our weekly bourbon and cigar night. And I made him take the leftovers home. He told his wife that he had ham sandwiches for her. And she made a funny face and then ate the sandwiches and sold. So they're a French ham sandwich. I know. I'm just telling you. There, croquet, monsieur. It's the very first thing I ever ate in France when I was a kid. We had to stop over in Paris one time on our way to Dubai, where I was growing up. And it's just, it's incredible. You use the King Hawaiian rolls and the ham, and then you put fontina cheese, and you make the bechamel sauce, and it's really easy to do. And you add some honey mustard to the bechamel, and you bake them in the oven until the cheese gets melty. And they're perfect. They're perfect for a party. Perfect for a party. You can hold it in your hand. It's just, it's perfect. You actually, believe it or not, I can feel in the force you're turning up your nose at this. You shouldn't. You should try it. You'll be amazed. And the way you get it is you text the word recipe to 33777. Text the word recipe to 33777. And what's going to happen is you'll get a link back. When you get the link back, you click it and you'll see a little form. You put in your email address and then you'll be able to subscribe. And tomorrow, you're going to get this recipe, and you're going to think, yeah, I don't know about this. It's really easy to make. It's the only ham sandwich worth eating on planet Earth. It really is, and it's an incredible sandwich. And you can make them for parties, and you can serve them as appetizers, and people will think that you have just, like, spent your entire day in the kitchen when really it takes maybe 20 minutes. The thing that takes the longest is grating the cheese. That's the longest part of the whole experience. Okay, text recipe. The singular, not recipes, recipe. Text that word to the phone number 33777. Click the link, put in your email address, and away you'll go. And you can thank me later, because my goodness, it is such an incredibly delicious thing that you will put in your mouth if you make this recipe. Now, I want to play you a little bit of audio from Joe Biden.
Chairman Leahy, Leader McCarthy, Senator Casey, Congressman Scott, Congressman, where is he? There you are, Paul. You understand this better than anybody does. I want to thank you, Congressman, for all your work. And I want to thank you all for being here. Second, by the way, where's Mom? Mom, is she here? Oh, she's watching. Okay, I thought you looked. I said, Mom is out there. I was going to ask her to stand up. But, Mom, you can't stand up and if you're home.
Now, he's not talking about his mom. He's talking about somebody else's mom there. He clearly forgot one member of Congress's name. This comes on the heels of him answering a reporter question yesterday where it sounded like he said his butt's been wiped. That's not what he said, but a lot of people heard it and thought that. He kind of mumbled. And then, of course, I told you people I was going to probably play this audio for the rest of my life. It needs to be played. It needs to be remembered because it's relevant to the point that I need to make. This is Joe Biden answering the question, when will 12-year-olds and under be vaccinated?
That's underway, just like the other question that's illogical. And I've heard you speak about it because I'm not being solicitous, but you're always straight up about what you're doing. And the question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are, why can't the experts say, we know that this virus is in fact
It's going to be, we know why all the drugs approved are not temporarily approved, but permanently approved.
Can we have a moment? I mentioned John Ellis yesterday. He's someone I read daily. And he pointed out that it's an illusion to say Joe Biden is fine. When you hear Joe Biden at these town halls interacting with reporters, speaking off the top of his head, Joe Biden is not fine. Now, to some degree, this is the overplayed hand by Republicans. Republicans should have held their fire to a degree or done a better job of framing the Joe Biden is really old stuff during the campaign because they said it so much. It kind of goes in one ear, out the other ear. But as I have said, if you've been a longtime listener on this program, the Joe Biden of 2020 was not the Joe Biden of 2016. The Joe Biden of 2016 was the Joe Biden of 2008. He really was. There wasn't a whole lot of difference. But that 4 years and plastic surgery, the Joe Biden of 2020 is not the Joe Biden of 2016. He has slowed down mentally. It's just true. It's not an attack. It's just true. And when you say this, if you're a Democrat, the Democrats come after you and try to get you back in line. If you're a Republican, a conservative, the Democrats attack you. But he's not Trump. He's not a racist. He may not be Donald Trump, but Donald Trump was in his right mind. For all of the talk of Democrats about we need the 25th Amendment to get rid of Donald Trump, do we need the 25th Amendment to do something about Joe Biden? He's not in his right mind. Well, maybe he's in his right mind. He's just slow. You know, everyone, a buddy of mine said this to me, and I think it is true that there comes a moment in every person's life, every single one of us, if our parents get to old age, every single one of us will get to a point, whether you've gotten there or not, where you realize that your parents really aren't capable anymore. It's like they went from being senior citizens to actually just being really old. And they can't function in ways they used to function. They can't take care of themselves in ways they used to take care of themselves. And it's just true. It's part of getting really old. And we tend to live a lot longer now. So in your 80s and into your 90s, and some people, their parents stay more capable longer, and some of them don't. But there comes a moment, and like this friend of mine said, it is an actual definitive moment in time where you realize mom or dad has hit an age where they're just not the same anymore. And we've hit that point with Joe Biden. It is not disrespectful to point it out. It's true. And Democrats don't want us to talk about it because they're worried about how it will impact the election. And the truth of the matter is there is no faith behind the scenes among Democrats. You talk to Democrats. You get Democrats off record. You get Democrats who are in the know, who are plugged into political circles, and talk to them about Kamala Harris. I told you people months ago, after the disastrous border trip, I told you Kamala Harris would disappear. You would not see Kamala Harris again for a while. She would be working. She's so busy, she can't go on these tours, all this stuff. I told you people, and where is Kamala Harris? She's gone into the witness protection program. It's like, where's Waldo, but with Kamala? And on the record, behind the scenes, on background, they're starting to say, you know, she doesn't have what it takes to be president. In fact, Democrats are starting to say what you and I have said forever. You know, she couldn't even make it to Iowa. It's not that she lost Iowa. She never even made it to Iowa. So you've got a president who has lost several steps with a vice president who no one likes, whose staff is bad-mouthing her on background, who the Democrats themselves aren't sure is capable of beating a Ron DeSantis or a second coming of Donald Trump. And that puts the Democratic Party in disarray. And the media, of course, the media is actually probably the best friend of Republicans right now. They don't even know it. Now, let me explain that because you're thinking, huh? The media is so out to get the GOP. Look at the 9/11 Commission. They're overplaying their hand on this and the like. Here's the thing. The media and the Democrats are in such a bubble together, and they're feeding off of each other, that they can't see that there's a storm brewing for the Democrats. They're so protective. They are so insistent that nothing is wrong, that Kamala Harris is perfect, and on and on it goes, that everything is hunky-dory and everybody's brilliant. They can't understand that their party is on the verge of a crack-up. Joe Biden literally was the only man who could keep that party together, and he is starting to age in real time, to the extent that Democrats behind the scenes are concerned. And Kamala Harris isn't capable of keeping the Democratic Party together. She's just not. And now in Ohio, you've got this Nina Turner race. So Marsha Fudge is now the, Housing and Urban Development Secretary. She was a Democratic congresswoman. And Nina Turner is running for her seat. And Fudge has the backing of Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and on it goes, all of them. And the left is pouring their resources and money into helping Nina Turner against her opponent, whose name escapes me all of a sudden. What is her opponent's name? In any event, it doesn't matter, because the Democrats are out to help Nina Turner against Chantel Brown. That's it. Thank you. Cuyahoga County City Councilwoman Chantel Brown. Now, this matters. This matters. This matters to you and me, wherever you are in the nation. This matters greatly. Why? Because Nina Turner is the progressive. Nina Turner, pay attention to this. Nina Turner is the woman who inspired Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to run for office. Nina Turner campaigned for Bernie Sanders. She is a leading progressive. She helped organize Bernie Sanders' campaign. She spoke on the tour for him. She traveled the country for progressives. She was on the Cleveland City Council and in the Ohio State Senate. She became one of the chief black spokeswomen for Bernie Sanders and progressive causes. She inspired Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and others to run for office, and they're trying to get her to Congress, and the Democratic establishment is pushing back. Hillary Clinton has come out against her. Members of the Biden team have behind the scenes come out against her. Jim Clyburn, the minority whip, whose endorsement got Joe Biden the Democratic nomination by getting him through South Carolina, has come out against her. Behind the scenes, the Congressional Black Caucus has come out against Nina Turner, because they know that if she gets elected, it will highlight just how far left the Democrats are growing. More and more polling is showing the Democrats are drifting too far left, and Joe Biden can't keep it together. He's too old to keep it together. And the alternative to Joe is Kamala Harris, who even Democrats don't think is capable of doing the job. And the media is so focused on telling everyone, January 6th, that's going to cost the Republicans, January 6th. Don't pay attention to the defund stuff, it's no big deal. Don't pay attention to critical theory, it's no big deal. Don't pay attention to boys and girls bathrooms, it's no big deal. Don't pay attention to any of the stuff that voters are actually paying attention to. Pay attention to January 6th, and don't pay attention to Joe Biden aging. And really, the voters, no voter is going to go into the polls in November of 2022 and think, yeah, January 6th, 2021, I got to vote against the Republicans. None of the Republicans you're going to be voting for were there on January 6th storming the Capitol. It's not going to matter. The Democrats have convinced themselves with the media that January 6th is the definitive moment of American history through which they can eradicate the Republicans. They're always telling themselves stuff like this. It's like the coyote getting the roadrunner, and it never works for them. And it's not going to work again. And meanwhile, you got a president of the United States who can't put three words together and make coherent sense. Well, there is some breaking news. This is official. It has happened. Texas and Oklahoma have formally requested SEC membership beginning in 2025. This is from CBS Sports. Oklahoma and Texas have taken the necessary step toward joining the SEC and forming college football's first super conference. On Tuesday, the two schools filed a joint letter formally requesting admission to the conference beginning on July 1st, 2025. The University of Texas at Austin and the University of Oklahoma sent the request to the Southeastern Conference Commissioner Greg Sankey. This morning, the statement reads, "The joint request seeks an invitation for membership starting July 1st, 2025. The two universities look forward to the prospect of discussions." Sankey released his own statement acknowledging the letter, but noted officially that the conference has not proactively sought new members. Still, the transition seems imminent. Conference presidents and chancellors have reportedly scheduled a meeting for Thursday to discuss adding the two blue bloods. A three-fourths majority vote equal to 11 of the conference's 14 members must approve expansion in order to add teams. Oklahoma and Texas, two esteemed academic institutions with storied athletic programs, today submitted formal requests, according to Sankey. While the SEC has not proactively sought the new members, we'll pursue significant change when there's a clear consensus among our members that such actions will further enrich the experience, blah, 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 blah. This is all about the money. Of course they're going to enrich the experience. Oh, yes, it'll enrich them, all right. Here's the thing. They would like to leave early, but they could owe $80 million combined in revenue distribution because of TV rights. Texas has a pretty terrible football team. They should put them in a conference, in the conference, and make them play Tennessee to see who's actually worse. Tennessee. But they got great cheerleaders. I'm just going to be really honest with you. I really want Texas in the SEC because you'll have the Florida cheerleaders. You'll have the Georgia cheerleaders. You'll have the Ole Miss cheerleaders, the LSU cheerleaders, and the Texas cheerleaders. We will dominate in cheerleaders. We will 100% dominate in cheerleaders, and that's a good thing. Let's just be honest. I mean, we rarely get to see them on television, but occasionally you do. And the Texas Longhorn cheerleaders are in a league all their own with maybe Georgia's with them. And I'm totally okay with that. I'm just being honest with you. As for football, Texas A&M inarguably is a better football program than Texas. I wasn't really a fan of bringing Missouri and Texas A&M into the SEC, but they're there now, so you might as well bring in Texas and Oklahoma as well. And no, that's not fair. Phillip says the Arkansas cheerleaders cancel them out. No, really. Because nobody really even watches Arkansas football, so nobody gets to see them on TV, and that's just rude anyway. I don't pay attention to the Arkansas cheerleaders, though, but, I mean, the Georgia, we could have, like, an SEC rivalry between the cheerleading squads. That would be, I would go to that event, as would every other red-blooded American male in the Southeast. But nonetheless, we're talking about the football program, and the football program, bring it in. It's all about the money. Their athletes in particular want to make more money. Here's the problem, though. The SEC gets so big, all of the meaningful good football teams outside of Ohio are in the SEC, and so the SEC championship really becomes the national championship unless Clemson continues to hold on, even though Trevor Lawrence isn't there anymore. Possibly, Clemson can give them a run for their money, but are there any others that really can? I don't know that they can. So you watch the SEC championship game, you're really going to be watching the national championship.